What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Iconic or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate it. We know you got a lot of choices out there. Couldn't do the show without the help of our sponsor, Chemical Free Body. We have had Tim James on the show now twice. He's explained to you the details about how easy it is to get yourself healthy. Obviously, you know why it's important. His company, Chemical Free Body, it does something really amazing. They are very particular about what they put into their products. Obviously, that's a good thing for us. Everything is gluten-free, GMO-free, soy-free, dairy-free. It's plant-based. It's certified organic. There's amazing products available. I have the gut detox. I just got it. I've been taking it for a while. Tim was right. Doesn't mess up your stomach. Everything works fine. Besides products, he also has classes that you can take. You can also sign up for coaching. Go to chemicalfreebody.com. Just take a look. Just see what they've got. We're getting into the winter months. You're going to want to have your armor on. You know what I mean? You want to get yourself as healthy as possible. When you go there, use the promo code MACRO and you'll get a discount there. They have free shipping on orders over $99 inside the United States, but they also have worldwide shipping available as well. So do something right, you know, for yourself. Take care of your body. We're going to need all the ammunition we can get getting into the tail end of 2020 and what we have in store in 2021. So check out chemicalfreebody.com. Yeah, well, you know, when I've been in Acapulco the last couple times, I get to hang out with cool people. I get to learn about crypto. I get to learn about health and wellness. I get to learn about unschooling. I've had David Rodriguez on who talked about that. But one of the guys that I really spent a lot of time with the last time we were there is Tim Pachote. He is from the Liberty Advisor. He's going to explain to you, you know, all this financial stuff can get a bit, you know, it can get a bit overwhelming. What do I do with my 401k, my IRA? How do I buy crypto? Do I need crypto? Should I buy gold? Should I buy silver? What about gold ETFs and silver ETFs? Tim's going to tell you why those things are a piece of shit. Anyway, Tim, what's cooking? How are you?
Hey, Charlie, it's good to be on your show. Appreciate the invite. And yeah, with David Rodriguez, I think I've hung out with him in like four different states all across the country in the past, you know, few months when up in Pork Fest and Jackalope Fest. And he wasn't at Red Pill, but yeah, so it's been
good. He was there in spirit, I'm sure, because he's a Red Pill type of guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How was Red Pill, by the way?
You know, it was fantastic. It was only done on maybe like a month and a half, maybe 2 months heads up. And there was, I was told there was over 600 people there, and I believed it. I mean, it was inside there. I saw maybe two people wearing a mask that probably worked there. Or maybe those were the CIA infiltrators, who knows. But, you know, the speakers were great. Obviously, Jabber Griffin at one point, I was hanging out with him till 2 a.m. and the guy was still going at it and running around the whole day. Yeah, absolute machine, you know, still with it, you know, more so than, you know, just about anybody out there. And it was good to see, you know, be around that many people who weren't afraid, who weren't scared, who were, you know, it's been 16 days. So obviously if something was going to happen, you know, it would have probably happened by now. But yeah, it was great. I did drive there because I refused to wear a mask, and I only wore a mask a couple times in July. But I've been that guy in the grocery store and everywhere else, and I flew without one in July. But then I feel like, you know what? I don't want to push for a lifetime ban. So actually drove across country, ended up being a 5,100-mile round trip journey because I ended up going like the northern route back home and visited some people. But no, it was really great. And if you guys can, if you go to redpillexpo.org, I'm sure you can probably sign up to get some of the previous, you know. And actually, you probably want some of the speakers who were there. So maybe you can come on macroaggressions. Like Dr. Andrew Kaufman was great. Obviously, Del Bigtree, you know, hits it out of the park every single time. This other guy, Dr. Brad Weeks. And so it did focus more on the plandemic aspect of it. And speaking of which, Mickey Wills from Plandemic was there too and gave a great talk. But yeah, I mean, so it wasn't as much financial, although they did have obviously some financial stuff with it, like Robert Kiyosaki and who was the other guy? George Gannon and then Alex Newman. Gave a great talk on basically all the same things that I cover, you know, virtual currency and how we're headed to a, you know, one world cashless society that's going to be contact traced and surveilled. But we'll probably get into that a little bit later on. So I don't want to, you know, spoil everything for where things are eventually going.
Well, let's get into that now because we've, you know, so you and I were at an Acapulco in February. So we're talking about like a month before all this kicked off. And we're talking, obviously, we're both speaking at the Dollar Vigilante Summit component of Anarchapulco, and that is financial related. So we're watching this, you know, we're listening to crypto guys, and we're going to get into that later. But and there's a push for this for cryptocurrency, but there is this looming component to this that we know is a bit has the potential for some darkness there, and that is when you start to hear the Federal Reserve talking about the Fed coin, or you hear Facebook's saying that they want to launch Libra, or all these cryptocurrencies that aren't really cryptocurrencies, and we start to hear about universal basic income being tied to this push for a you know, the removal of cash. We were kind of talking about it during Acapulco, but in a theoretical sense. Now, since then, what we've seen is an actual move away from cash. We've seen the demonization of it, like, oh, well, you know, coronavirus lives on dollar bills for up to 3 weeks and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, we're all shaking our heads going, this is such dog shit. Like, we can see the agenda. Is that the goal? Are they trying to get us out of cash so that everything is trackable?
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's the skip to the end version is yes. But, you know, it is not just the Fed. It's, you know, got the Bank of International Settlements. I mean, pretty much every day coming out with something called what they call CDBCs central bank digital currencies. You got the ECB talking about it. You got the Bank of Japan talking about this. Obviously, the Fed is talking about it. Jerome Powell just last week, they're like, well, you know, we don't want to be, don't worry, we're not going to phase out cash, but we're just looking to implement this alongside with it. Yeah, bullshit. We all know that's not, although that's not going to happen. Bank of China, actually, just about a week or two ago, they did some experiment where in Shenzhen, they there was some lottery where they're going to give out like 50,000 people are going to get like $30. And so they got, I think, 2 million people to sign up for this for the off chance that they could win $30. And that was enough for the slaves over there to, you know, gallantly go and try to get into this thing. So, yeah, so they had, you know, so it's amazing the game theory that really goes on behind what the technocrats are using in terms of how they can, you know, sneakily get people onto this. A lot of your listeners are probably aware that the first $1,200 stimulus, you know, rollout plan and the Maxine Waters bill was actually supposed to be a Fed dollar. Right. It was actually in the bill in Congress. And then, you know, Coinbase's former chief, I think COO or chief operating officer, one of the higher C-level Coinbase guys is now at the head of the Office of Comptroller Currency, basically controlling the currency as part of the Treasury. And that's been since April 1st. I mean, so they are positioning and getting all the chess pieces in line to go cashless. I mean, I think this whole pandemic was basically just a bank robbery where essentially and you guys can go to my site and actually watch the Anarchapoco talk that I gave from this year. Because what I on stage, and this is on stage, I was telling people what the game plan was in terms of how to play this. And I wasn't really focused so much on coronavirus as much as I was focused on, listen, we're in a huge bubble right now. There's only, you know, two things that can happen. It, you know, the Fed can keep printing more money and the bubble gets get bigger, or the, you know, the bubble will finally find a pin and it's going to pop. And so to do that, you know, I told people on stage, you know, I was looking into a put option strategy where we had bought put options on the S&P, which for those of you who don't know, is sort of like, so it's not insurance, but it's sort of like buying insurance on your portfolio. So, and again, it's not insurance in case the SEC is listening to this. And so basically how it works is like, if you have homeowners insurance and you pay your premium, you hope your home doesn't burn down, but you know, in the off chance it does, then the premiums that you were paid go to, you know, building your house back or building it back most of the way. And so in this case, you know, what it meant was in 2019, when the market, you know, irrationally went up, you know, 30 something percent, you know, we went up about 26, and I'm talking about the S&P 500. And then this year, when the S&P 500 was down about 34%, we were only down about 4%, but meanwhile, we had protected the other gains. We actually did the same thing in the fourth quarter of 2018 as well. And so it's not actually how we're invested currently. So I do want to make that, you know, a little proviso out there. But, you know, I'm one of the few people out there who made almost all the money last year and didn't get killed this year when everything was at the worst of it. And I was talking specifically how the corporate bond market, how you had half of the investment grade bonds were only one notch away from being junk. And historically, you'd see about 30-40% of those under a normal recession turn to, you know, get downgraded at least one notch. And so my thesis was, well, you know, in 2008, you didn't really have a bunch of ETFs or index funds. I mean, you did, but it was nowhere near the size of that market today as a percentage, because back then you still had mutual funds were still dominating things. Mm-hmm. But now that you've seen it's flipped, and now ETFs dominate everything. And so if you're in an investment grade bond ETF and your bond gets downgraded, well, then now that fund is forced to sell. And so my thesis was, well, hey, that forced selling is going to be get more forced selling. That's going to be get more forced selling. It's going to create this avalanche. And the Fed's going to have to come in and buy up, you know, corporate bonds. They're going to have to do, you know, massive, you know, the next time we have a recession, it's going to be, you know, $2-3 trillion. And obviously, you know, people there didn't think I was, you know, a conspiracy theorist or crazy, but, you know, the average financial advisor does. You know, that's basically, you know, the Fed actually blew my expectations away and actually printed way more money and expanded things way quicker than even what I thought. And I was already having like a tinfoil hat view compared to everybody else of where this was going. Right. And they even, you know, blew up my expectations for this. But, you know, ultimately, then you see now the Fed owns a third of all mortgages. I don't see anybody complaining about that or even know that's really going on. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm not talking about like our community, the people watching us, like the overall public. And then, you know, now you see the Fed actually owns corporate bonds. They now own junk bonds. They actually, and it's even worse than that, because they didn't just go out and buy bonds. They actually had BlackRock, who was acting as the middleman sort of stockbroker and all this. And at one point, BlackRock was unloading their own bullshit ETFs, their junk bond ETF fund. They were unloading it to the Fed while collecting a commission for acting as a middleman to broker to get their own bullshit off their own balance sheet.
Of course, they were. That doesn't surprise me at all. That is just Wall Street in a nutshell. You bring us in to help you with a problem, and during our help, we decide to sell you all of the garbage that's on our balance sheet and collect a commission. I'm sure they didn't discount it either. I'm sure they got 100 cents on the dollar for everything all of their garbage they were offloading to the Fed.
Probably more than 100 cents, yeah, because right, how exactly. Bond pricing works is it works sort of like a teeter-totter. So as interest rates go down, the underlying values of the bonds go up. And obviously, since, you know, like the, you know, early 80s, basically the rates have just been going down, 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 down. They pretended that they could raise rates, you know, in 2018. And then we saw, you know, what happened after that. Mm-hmm. So you had bond prices basically all time highs, and the Fed didn't say, oh, well, you know, in order for us to, you know, take this, we'll give you, you know, how about we give you 50 cents in the dollar? No, they bought it, you know, over, you know, basically probably paid a premium to get it, and gave BlackRock, you know, all the, you know, all the commission on that. And if you actually take an underlying look at the holdings of the bond portfolios, the top 10 holdings, about half of them were foreign companies like Toyota and BMW, and not even American companies. And then I think Apple is like number three or four. I mean, Apple has, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of cash and is one of the richest companies in the world. I mean, what the fuck do they need? I mean, I don't know if I can swear on here. But I mean, what do they need our money for? I mean, I mean, Apple already is sitting on all these mounds of cash. And so we need to now subsidize people, Apple bond investors, so then that way they could go borrow more money to then buy back their own stock. And, you know, and basically, you know, we're slipping in, not even slipping into, or you know, sprinting into, you know, complete fascism. And even what we have called a healthcare system is actually more of a fascist healthcare system than it is a socialist healthcare system. And it's just, yeah, it's just so frustrating, you know, guys like me, guys like you, you know, everyone else there at the TDV Summit in Acapulco, to see all this stuff, you know, happening, you know, calling it out years in advance, you know, positioning ourselves years in advance. And, you know, it's not fun being right, because being right, you know, is ultimately going to slip us into this complete technocratic where they're, you know, enslavement, where they're going to have us by the you know what. And the number one way they can do that is not to, is basically to, is to tie everybody financially. And this is, sounds crazy, but I actually, the day before Facebook Libra announced their white paper, or they announced Libra, but they didn't actually, nobody knew what it was, the underlying component of it was. Mm-hmm. I had made a video where I was sort of spoofing like a Jeff and Lucy show, where I was, and actually I think this was before there was technically a Jeff and Lucy show, but he still the dog, was walking around with his dog. And I did one where I was walking around with my dogs, and I had theorized that the Libra would probably be closely modeled after the special drawing right, which is the IMF. You know, the Bank of International Settlements is how they, you know, trade amongst the member banks, because the Bank of International Settlements actually is its own central bank. It's a central bank of the central banks, and is like the Vatican or DC. It's its own separate state. So it's its own separate country, complete autonomy. Nobody can come in there to, you know, shut them down, or to, you know, issue warrants or anything like that. And so I made a theory that, okay, and it's, I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it's something like, you know, it's about, you know, probably 45% US dollar to 50% dollar. It's probably about 30% euro. And then you got, you know, sprinkling in there, you got some, you know, of some of the other smaller currencies like the renminbi and the yuan, and I think a little bit of the Swiss franc, maybe some gold. And take a look at the SDR, it was almost that exactly. Like the two almost mirrored. And so it looked like Facebook was just trying to get a little bit too big for their britches. And a lot of the powers that be were probably like, hey, no, listen, this was our plan. You're not going to go scoop us and go, you know, jump out in front of this train before us. Like we're the ones who want the power. And so I think but the thing with crypto, though, not to, you know, bounce around too much here, because we touched on a bunch of subjects, because it can be used as the thing that helps free humanity more than anything, or be used what enslaves humanity more than anything. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, it's going to go one of those two routes no matter what. So I've just the entire time, you know, I do have like a little like segment of my show called the Crypto Wealth Show. Episode one was devoted to this, because there actually are some, you know, Bilderberg ties to Bitcoin, you know, core development, which, you know, I'm sure is part of your podcasting, and, you know, especially being more in the conspiratorial realm, yeah, it's probably definitely something we want to touch on. But, you know, you go to the former head of the Bilderberg steering committee, I think two or three times, was Henry de Castries. He's the CEO of AXA. It's AXA. It's a gigantic French, you know, insurance conglomerate. Actually, it was the first company I ever interviewed for, just by complete coincidence. Mm-hmm. And so actually, I have a sweatshirt from them, and I gave him a tone vase to try to troll him. But he didn't. He actually liked it. So it backfired on me. So the head of AXA, it was the head of the Bilderberg steering committee. And then they also put in like $70 or $80 million into Bitcoin core development to help control where the Bitcoin development was going. And so here you have literally the head of Bilderberg putting up all the seed money for the Bitcoin core development. And then what they wanted to do, I mean, this is like a really long, complicated, boring subject for a lot of people, but the quick version is you had one side that said, hey, let's just make Bitcoin get a little bit bigger. We'll just increase the size like to two times of what their current block size is. We can fit more. And then another group's like, no, we need to take the information here and take some over here and jumble it up around here and do this and that. And yeah, maybe we'll make it a little bit bigger too. And basically make it completely convoluted and turn it into basically not even Bitcoin anymore. Well, that one won out. So Bitcoin today And this is not to make, I'm just like giving like the actual analysis, not making investment advice on which one's better, or where you should put your money on either one of these. But Bitcoin Cash, from a philosophical standpoint, is actually more like Bitcoin, the original Bitcoin, than what we refer to today as Bitcoin. And it's not to say that, you know, obviously Bitcoin being the brand name, you know, there's still a bunch of use cases, but you can see what they're trying to do. They're trying to basically make Bitcoin a store of value as opposed to being electronic cash, even though the original white paper was called a peer-to-peer electronic cash. And so they want to create these different middlemen, these different rent seekers, like you always see in everything. And so what they want to do is create this Lightning Network where oh, well, we just use the Lightning Network and it's going to take, but then the Lightning Network can be like a bank or can be a place that KYCs you that can then stop your transaction or, and so obviously, you know, that was not why I got involved in the crypto space, was not to promote something like that. Although, you know, obviously there's other currencies that can't be tracked, traced, or surveilled, a little bit more bullish, obviously, on those. But, you know, it's not all about currency. There's going to be a lot of real world use case applications. You're going to have, you know, different, like something like an Ethereum is more of a, almost like a smart computer smart contract type platform where it can do, I mean, just like the stock market could be through a blockchain. You don't need to have the current stock market and the current setup that it is today. You can have it done through a blockchain instead of getting your bond, like the bonds we were just talking about. Imagine if you can get paid, you know, so if you get paid once a year, you're going to get paid, you know, probably a, you know, so I mean, so if you can, so people would probably prefer to get paid more than to get paid less. So they'd rather get paid, you know, monthly than quarterly. They'd rather get paid weekly than monthly. They'd rather get paid daily than weekly. They'd rather get paid. What if you can get paid by the second? So you can add premiums to that. And so with crypto technology, you can make it where you could have these algorithms where it could trade down to the second, or you could eventually get to a point where you could even bypass the exchanges completely. Now I'm not like super optimistic that that's going to happen in any reasonable time frame because of, you know, government regulations and SEC and things like that. But, you know, who's not to say that someday you couldn't trade Bitcoin for, you know, Apple stock and have Apple stock beyond the blockchain. And then you just, you know, what they call an atomic swap. And now we're starting to get into some more, you know, getting into the weeds of some things.
What's the main difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum? Because I always hear Ethereum is like, you know, as an option. And lately now, I know Jeff has been, Berwick has been really high on Monero, and that apparently has more of a privacy component. So you've got Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Monero as an example. And somebody is interested in putting some of their money into crypto, and they don't know which ones to go to. What is the difference? Bitcoin obviously has brand name recognition. I hear good things. I hear bad things about Ethereum at the same time. So I don't know where to go on that. Monero, the only thing I know about it is that it has more of a privacy slant to it. But it's also not as well known as the other two. So what is, lay it out for us. What's the difference, you know, in a simple fashion about these three types of cryptocurrencies?
Well, those are my three favorite currencies, so it's a good thing that you oh, listed good. Those three.
Well, I didn't know that in advance, so we did not pre-plan this out. I just kind of...
Well, good thing you didn't mention Ripple, because, you know, fuck those guys. But anyways, yeah, so with Bitcoin, you know, that's the brand name. That's what everybody's heard of. But it's sort of morphed itself into a store of value. And so what gives it value, or I mean, obviously, you know, I guess what someone else is willing to pay for it is ultimately what gives it value. But you have a computer network that's, you know, hundreds of times the size of Google, and you have these specific computers, what they call the ASICs, that do nothing but try to solve these super advanced mathematical equations. And so, you know, long story short, it's basically like a, you know, every 10 minutes there's essentially a lottery, and whoever wins that lottery gets, I think it's either 6.25 or 6.5 Bitcoin. I think it's 6.25. Anyways, it's right around 6.5 Bitcoin they get. And it was 12.5 back in May, but then they, you know, but then it was called the halvening. And so, before that it was 25, before that it was 50. And so, you know, there is these algorithms built into this. So as you have these, all these computers around the world are, you know, basically trying to guess this algorithm that then wins the Bitcoin, but then also then processes the next block. And so in order to hack it or attack it, and I guess attack would be a better word, you would have to literally have like more computing power than Google, throwing all this, you know, hash power, which is sort of like a guess, at the network. And then the network, you'd have to win that block. Then you'd have to then win the next block. Then you'd have to go basically, and then in between that, you know, rewrite all of history. But then even if that did happen, there's all these records of what the block used to be that we could then be like, okay, this is some bad state actor. And then we could just cut those people out. And then now the government just wasted a bunch of money to attack something that was then useless. And then as there's more hashing power on the network, then the algorithm gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So I don't know exactly where they're at now, but it goes all the way out to the 258, call it SHA 256. So it goes all the way out to, the 256, I'm trying to think, exponential curve. So, as each one gets, it gets exponentially tougher and tougher. So as you have more power on the network, it gets, tougher, because back in the day you could do it off a laptop. And obviously today you've got to buy these specialized machines that are then, obsolete. But the biggest factor is going to be also, basically access to cheap electricity is another big factor. Now, the problem is if I know, let's say I'm a business owner and I've got 10 employees and I'm paying them all in Bitcoin hypothetically, and let's say you're my competitor and you could say, okay, well, I figured out what Tim's address is and I see that he pays his employees, this person X and this person, Y and this person, so on and so forth. Well, maybe if you wanted to, steal away some of my employees, you could be like, okay, well, I know what he's paying them and I'll just pay them, offer them a little bit more, or I know what he's buying these components for his widget, and I'll go and undercut him. And so there are things that you wouldn't want to necessarily have for privacy reasons. You also would want to know how much money had ever gone through your bank account. So imagine if all your bank accounts were just, if you knew somebody's long string of digits, and then you could just, click a button and go see exactly how much money was in there at the time, or see where it had gone, or see this whole map. People wouldn't really want to sign on to that. And so, they try to bastardize, Monero, saying it's for drug dealers and terrorists. Well, I guess, first off, if it's good enough for drug dealers and terrorists, then it should be good enough for me, because, they obviously, what are drug dealers and terrorists use the most? They use the US dollar more than anything. So if you want to, which I guess they are trying to phase out the dollar, so maybe I shouldn't give them any ideas. But there are legitimate use cases of why you'd want to have privacy. I mean, if someone can just say, oh, hey, that guy's worth $10 million. And then all of a sudden you're, more prone to being kidnapped, or maybe your kid's being kidnapped, or right, held for ransom, or, you're just becoming a target. That's just, some of the things that could do. But, there's a lot of use cases. I did a whole video on this with a guy who, I forgot his last, I think this guy's name was Daniel Kim. And he was, I believe he was a Harvard PhD, Yale MBA, Asian guy in a suit. And then you've got myself, who's a CFP, talking about the use cases of Monero, which is, typically what people refer to as a drug dealer and terrorist one. That's just them, people trying to, basically just paint it in a bad light. But, in terms of privacy, I think at some point they're going to make it illegal. But when they do make it illegal, it'll probably end up just being worth even more money. Just like when they made, when I was going to college, they made Four Loko illegal. And what everybody did is they all went out and bought a whole bunch of Four Loko. And then, then there's a black market for Four Loko, even though that stuff tastes like crap. But it's on the micro scale. I mean, they make drugs. Well, actually, I guess drugs ended up getting cheaper after they made it illegal, but government can't even get that right. So, and then with Ethereum, it's not really trying to solve a money. It's more creating like the smart protocol, smart contract platform that can do other things than simply just money. I mean, now it can do the money aspect of it, as well, but it's sort of like you're creating this, AI supercomputer network that can be able to do, theoretically, now Ethereum has a problem in scaling, and they always keep saying, Ethereum 2.0 is always around the corner. But, it's just like, trust the plan, Q is going to, lock up all the pedophiles right around the corner too. Well, guess what? The corner is Tuesday. Or if you guys are listening to this later on, the corner already happened, and we'll see how that election shakes out. Maybe we'll get into that in a little bit. But because I did accurately predict Trump was going to win in 2016 on video, and also said that they're going to blame it on the Russians too when he did win. So, I don't really know too many people that have that street cred. My grandpa literally staged an intervention with me telling me how much of an idiot I sounded like for saying that. But getting back to Ethereum, it's just creating the smart contract platform where you can basically like creating programmable money. Like you can create like different if-then statements, or there could be online betting that are going through and having people verify, hey, this team beat that team, and then we pay out the money to over here. Or you could even decentralize insurance functions through it. You could put, you know, land titling on the blockchain to say, hey, you know, why do you have to go pay a titling company, you know, $2,000 or $1,500 to go prove it's your land when it could be done on a blockchain? Now, obviously, you have to put the right information in there to begin with. So there's, you know, that element of it. And, you know, nothing's perfect. And, you know, I'm not here to say I've got, you know, all the answers, but I did just see a article today from either The Hill or The Nation where it blamed Arizona's libertarianism for the having the worst numbers in America. And of course, it listed my exact town of where I'm at as the use case, which I'm pretty sure I did have coronavirus January 2nd, flying back from New York into Arizona, that I caught it on the plane. So I could have literally been the Typhoid Mary of Arizona that first spread it. And the first time I actually left my house was actually to go to a Sam Tripoli show when he came here on my birthday. And I did actually like kind of stay far away from him, and I was like, hey, but I kind of like did like a really far away kind of fist bump, and I was like, hey, I don't want to get too close. But this is after, you know, I felt a lot better by then, but I was quarantining before it was popular. Oh, and one more thing is flying back from Acapulco, just to be a dick, I decided that I'd wear a face mask, and actually I have a video of me putting a mask on, getting my TSA global entry pre-check interview. So this wasn't even like normal coming back to the country. This was to get my global entry interview. And I saw this other girl, Katie and Ania, like throw a mask on like 2 weeks before. I'm like, oh man, that's really ballsy. I'm going to try that. And so I have a video of me wearing a mask in February, and TSA was not happy with me at all. They were super pissed. And then I flew back in June and July without one, and then they were not happy with me, pissed because I wasn't wearing one. And it was just, so I literally had the proof that you guys were first mad at me because I was wearing one. Now you're mad at me for not wearing one. Because by then, you know, and there was some concern in February of, you know, hey, the government's not, you know, worried at all about this. You know, it was in the news that people were dropping dead in China in the streets and all sorts of stuff. And then as soon as I saw our government start worried about it, I'm like, yeah, it's probably BS. And, you know, if it really was something, they'd probably want us to die or have some sort of lockdown. But then I saw the greater implications of this whole bank robbery that the Fed committed. And now they get to, you know, shut down all the riots. We had riots going on around the world, you know, in Hong Kong and France and Europe and basically a lot of places in America. Well, now a lot of those shut down because you're not allowed to go outside. And it just checks off so many different boxes, you know, for the globalists, for the elite of what they want to do that, you know, it was, my opinion, definitely was engineered, definitely was, you know, released onto the public. And, you know, they can't even, you know, get their pandemics right, that they, you know, don't even make one that's deadly enough to, you know, I'm sure that they're probably somewhere Bill Gates is shedding a tear that only, you know, 200,000, which, you know, can't even really believe that number either, have passed away from this. But yeah, that was a long rant. Not sure if I answered your question on top three cryptos you mentioned.
So let's follow up on that really, really quick then. If somebody then wants to buy, let's just talk to me like I'm a moron on crypto, because I am. But if somebody says, okay, I've got $10,000 in my bank account and I want to buy cryptocurrency, how do they do it? Where do they go? Do they download a wallet first? Do they go to Coinbase? Do they go to some exchange? How do you get it?
Well, I mean, since I am a licensed financial advisor, I can't like make like blanket recommendations of everybody just going out and buying this stuff. But if somebody wanted to get it, I mean, Coinbase is probably one of the easiest places. Now, you know, they have, you know, shut people down for censorship. You know, the guy from Gab, I think, got shut down, and they've shut down one of my business bank accounts, and they've done some, you know, shady things in the past. And so, you know, some people don't like to use them because of that. And that's fine. You can do some more, you know, digging and find out other ways to get it. But yeah, I mean, there's big exchanges like Kraken, which, you know, sort of a pain in the butt to try to get onboarded there. There's, you know, and that, I mean, that's probably the easiest. I mean, you got Gemini, you know, a really easy way to buy Bitcoin as well. Coinbase is easy because you can go and make like automatic purchases. So what I recommend is people just, you know, you buy like, for example, like $100 a month, and you just every month, you know, buy $100 of it. And then eventually, and then also importantly, you don't want to necessarily leave it on the exchange either. So you want to then able to get what they call a hardware wallet and take, which is sort of like a glorified USB drive, and get your money off of the exchange. Because if it's on the exchange, if something happens to the exchange, or somebody, you know, steals your cell phone, or tricks AT&T or Verizon into, you know, thinking that they're you, and they SIM swap you and you lose all your money, or they, you know, hack your email and change your, you know, your phone number on there to their phone number and steal your money. I mean, this stuff happens all the time. And, you know, and if you got, you know, a little bit of money on there, you know, probably not a big deal. But, you know, if it's something that you can't afford to lose, you know, I would definitely not keep it on the exchange. And I would also go through and watch all these crypto wealth shows I've done. They're actually on BitChute now. And I've got, you know, probably 40 different episodes specifically on crypto. I haven't come out with one in a while, but it's all sort of like evergreen content where you can see, you know, different topics that are up there. But yeah, Coinbase is probably the easiest for a US investor. I know some people are probably going to torch me in the comments that, oh, you shouldn't be using Coinbase. But okay, well, for someone that's just getting on board, that's probably the easiest.
Yeah,
that's if you want to get
the easiest.
Yeah, if you want to get Monero, yeah, Monero though is going to be a tougher one to deal with, because like I think Kraken has it, but you're going to have to download something like Edge Wallet, so Edge.app. I don't know if you know Paul Pui. He was at Interacapulco 2 years ago, and so he comes from our community. And so there you can go say, okay, hey, I can transfer my Bitcoin into Monero, or transfer my Ethereum into Monero. That's probably the easiest way. But again, I'm not trying to give blanket advice in case the SEC is watching this, but yeah.
When I was in Anarchapulco, Johnny Dollar, who I just had on the show, his episode just went out. He was the one, you got to get it. He said, you got to get an Edge wallet. I'll show you. I gave him my phone. He set it all up. He sent me some money that way. He just said, here, I'll send you $5. I'll show you how it all works and everything. And he said, you can put this Edge wallet on your phone. And he said, and the nice thing, as long as you know what your password is and you make sure you remember your password for this etching, you can then, let's say you're going back through, we were in Mexico going back to the US. He said, you're going to go through customs. Let's say they say, give me your phone, or, you know, some of these countries that will go through your phone, which is insane. But he'll say, just before that part happens, delete Edge wallet off of your phone. Where you
can create a dummy account, or create a dummy account too.
Load it back on, type in your password, and it pops back up. So he was telling
exactly what I did. That's exactly what I did. And I was so pissed that I didn't get any questioning. I'm like, I'm like, I'm coming back with, I've got this like two different, because I was, you know, had a, you know, I was expoing there. So I had like all this different expo stuff with crypto on it. And I was speaking at a crypto anarchist conference and giving two presentations there, and, you know, did all these videos with World Alternative Media, you know, with Josh and all these different, different Thought Criminals podcast.
Yeah, man.
And I know I did. I was almost insulted. I'm like, man, what the fuck do I need to do here? So, but it's because I had the mask on, and they were, they were so freaked out by the mask. They were just, aside from why are you wearing a mask and are you sick, I didn't get asked, you know, where are you going, business or pleasure, where'd you come from? I didn't get asked anything.
Get the fuck away from me, you contaminated monster. I don't want
any. And this is February 19th. So that was a ballsy move to where nobody was wearing masks on February 19th. So when I threw it on specifically to go through the TSA line, and they were not happy with me. But, you know, in retrospect, it made that going through really easy. And now I've got a great story that I was probably one of the first people to both wear one and then simultaneously not wear one.
I know.
On a plane.
I saw your videos. I saw your videos of you going through and being like, hey, I'm not wearing a mask on this flight. Fuck them. So, but that's...
And David Rodriguez that same day got kicked off a flight. So we did it on the same day at different times.
He was coming back from Porkfest too, right? Was that where you were coming back from?
Yeah, then my plane got delayed and I was going to miss a flight. So I stayed in New Hampshire for one more day. And that's right when Ghislaine Maxwell got wrapped up like 15 minutes away from me. So, you know, I'd never, and then weird, that video never uploaded. I made a video right there of Ghislaine and talking about all the connections with her dad, Robert Maxwell, Mossad, and everything. And that video would never upload to YouTube. It would never process. I've tried it like 10 times. And they, like the AI just has it blocked to upload that one. So.
God, it's almost like they're rigging YouTube to make sure that certain videos don't get played.
Gee, somebody's listening to me.
It was funny. I was talking to when they had the big purge, all these channels. So I go, of course, writing a book with Jeff Berwick, I go and look up, and Dollar Vigilante's gone, and I'm like, oh shit. And so I sent him a message on Telegram, like, looks like they got you. And his response was, ha, 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 ha. No, we got word that they were coming for us the night before. So we took it all down. We're just going to put it back up a little bit.
Well, they got us through World Alternative Media. 1,700 videos gone, memory hold.
I know. Those fuckers.
I mean, and the funny thing is, we were planning on getting off anyways November 5th and just doing at that point trailers. And so, you know, Josh kept saying, you know, remember the 5th of November, we're getting off. And then, so it's sort of like, you know, a girlfriend, you know, you're about to break up with her and then she breaks up with you first. Like, wait, no, we had already been telling everybody that we're going to break up with you on November 5th. Right. And then you go and dump us. But then they dumped us with all the QAnon people too. And so we were adamantly against, not to, you know, offend anybody here, but we were adamantly against QAnon the entire time. And then here we are, got thrown off with all the QAnon people. And so now, you know, we're lumped in with Q, even though the whole time we were talking shit about Q.
And
so,
most of Josh's videos are like, you know, in West Africa somewhere where he's exploring some.
He's in Montenegro right now. And he was in my house for 2 months, then decides, oh, hey, I'm just going to go to Montenegro because, yeah, he had a lot of reasons. He had to get out of the country to go back to Canada, and then he didn't want to get stuck in Canada. Yeah, it's a whole big mess. But now the EU just banned Canadians from traveling, and a lot of the other like satellite EU places like Bulgaria and Croatia and stuff, I think they've also kind of gone ahead with it too. So now he's looking at going to like Tanzania or Zanzibar, or I'm like, man, he's gonna be like Madagascar or someplace. He's gonna be in Africa running around with lions or something. I don't know what his ultimate game plan is.
It's shitty, obviously, that YouTube's doing this. We can see their plan. They're obviously getting orders from somebody above them, Atlantic Council, you know, Council on Foreign Relations, all these groups that have a vested interest in everybody keeping their mouth shut. But what they don't like, the common thread, is they don't like people pointing out their scams. They don't like people pointing out their the sort of hijinks that they're up to. And you guys, you and Josh and John, have been doing really good. Really good work. But like, frankly, if I had to make a list of, you know, the top 100 YouTube channels that were being disruptive and creating problems for the government or for the Democrats even too, you guys wouldn't be on that list. You guys were talking about really like financial components. You were talking about some censorship and things,
which
like
is almost
that.
Even more dangerous, you know, talking about the because they really don't want you knowing about, you know, the one world cashless society and how the Fed works and how the BIS works, and you know, cause, and calling out the bullshit from both sides is almost even more dangerous to them than because I was a Trump supporter in 2016 because I got pissed off at the Libertarian Party and Bill Weld, which, you know, I feel very justified now that he then left the Republican, he left the Libertarian Party to run as a Republican. And then this, he just tweeted out a photo of him, you know, voting for Joe Biden, or saying, hey, I didn't vote for Trump, you know. And so this guy, you know, was anti-gun, and the libertarians have pissed me off. So I was like, you know what, Trump, at least at the time, again, this is August, late August of 2016. You know, anyone can money morning quarterback this now. But at the time, he wasn't CFR. He wasn't Goldman Sachs. Yeah, he later then surrounded himself with Goldman Sachs and CFR people. But at the time, I'm like, you know what? My bar is pretty low. I'm like, he's talking shit to all the people that I hate. All the people that I hate, you know, hate him. So I was like, you know what? If it'll piss off all these people that screwed me in 2012 with Ron Paul and how they railroaded him, then, you know, I'm going to go for him. And then I immediately started, you know, pointing out, you know, him putting in Jerome Powell, who's a swamp creature, and him putting in, you know, Gary Cohn, who's a Hillary Bundler and carbon tax credit guy. And like, you know, I didn't work my ass off to help you get elected to have that happen. And right before the election, I was reaching out from a standstill over 1 million people a week. And then Facebook cut my reach down by 99.99% when I had a fake news list go viral 2.5 months before Trump used that term and listed my one person by name on that list, Paul Krugman. A year and a half later, Paul Krugman won the award for most fake news by Donald Trump. So,
and he got busted with child porn on his laptop and said that it was planted there by somebody else. Yeah.
Oh, my security team has informed me that the CP has somehow ended up on my computer. And that got buried.
Yeah.
It's not like he's, you know, Hunter Biden or something. So,
well, one of the things that I got into, I don't know a ton about it, but I'm fascinated. Maybe you can help me out. I watched this great documentary called The Spider's Web. It's a British-based documentary about the city of London, and it focuses a lot on offshore banking and the role of offshore banking. And since, you know, you and I cover topics that really kind of, you know, that really all have ties in some way to offshore banking, because we're talking about crooked governments and crooked multinational corporations and politicians that are scumbags and people that are, you know, world leaders of third world countries that magically all of a sudden decide to get on board with U.S. policy and I'm sure they have bank accounts somewhere. So this concept of private offshore banking has been demonized by the media and the government as, once again, drug dealers and only drug dealers and money launderers use these sort of tactics, much like the way they demonize Bitcoin and Monero and currencies like that. Is there anything necessarily wrong with offshore banking? Is there anything necessarily wrong with having privacy in your banking? I see these things as a good thing. I see them as you know, like the government maybe not liking them because they can't keep track of your money. Apple, all the major corporations run perfectly legal scams through Irish corporations,
Ireland, Irish sandwich
and sandwich, you know, double sandwiches and things like this. All these tactics that are totally legal. I you know, write a book with Jeff Berwick, anarchist, fuck taxation, all that stuff. Am I wrong for not having a problem with any of this offshore banking? I feel like if they can hide this money from governments and taxations, go for it. Is there anything wrong with this?
Well, I mean, from an IRS perspective, I think if you don't declare you have an offshore bank account, then it's like a gigantic fine and, you know, they'll have your balls in the vice grip if you don't. But the first thing I think of when I hear spider web is, you know, Bohemian Grove, you know, weaving spiders, yeah. Come not here. I have not seen that documentary. But, you know, here's a little secret is that the ultra rich want to increase taxes because they, like you had mentioned, know all the different loopholes and the Irish Dutch sandwich to, you know, get out of taxes and have an army of people figuring out this stuff for them. And then also lobbying this, that, you know, guys like Warren Buffett, I think Warren Buffett actually was the 2008 largest recipient of bailout funds. If you actually break down the underlying companies that he owned. And so, I mean, and it has to get all the way back to, you know, how central banking was basically, not necessarily central banking, but the Fed. It ties back to the panic of 1907. Upcoming, I do have a little, I don't have it out yet. It might be out by the time this airs, is a Jekyll Island documentary where I was actually sitting in the room where the Fed was created. And I give it, you know, a little bit of history. I was touring around the building. And as I go to walk outside, as I'm doing my video, Geoffrey Griffin just happens to be standing right there. So that was it. You know, that was pretty sweet.
The guy that wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island. Yeah. Standing there in Jekyll Island as you're doing the presentation about where the Fed starts. I mean, it's almost like you couldn't have scripted that any better.
Yeah, no, I really couldn't. And especially, yeah, the first time I ever spoke at Anarchapoco, I'm backstage. I just lost my job for about to speak there, you know, which is like, you know, a six-figure residual income I had to give up. And, you know, now I'm actually even stronger than I was before, but, you know, I had to go through a whole bunch of crap to get here. Right. But I go backstage, it's Mike Maloney and Geoffrey Griffin, who are like my two biggest idols, and they're the only two people back there. I'm like, oh man, this is, you know, just adding to the nerves here.
This is a trip. Yeah, I know. I got on a plane. I had a layover in Mexico City coming to Acapulco, and Ed was on my plane, and I just sat next to him. I said, I'm going to be hearing you speak tomorrow at the event. And he just turned to me and he goes, I'm sorry to hear that, man. and then we talked for 45 minutes and about all that good stuff. And yeah, I'm a big promoter of Anarchapulco because I like these sorts of scenarios that you run into. But anyway, back to this offshore. So I understand the IRS hates offshore banking because they can't keep track of everything, but what's stopping us from, do you have to be like a multimillionaire to have an offshore bank account? Like, is this something that the common person can set up as a way of moving some of their assets to a place that's out of the jurisdiction of the United States? Or are you making yourself a big target by doing something like that?
I'm not a lawyer, so I got to be an accountant. Yeah, so I got to be careful giving tax advice. You hit me with all the tough questions. Are you CIA over here trying to get me in trouble?
No, I'm not trying to get in trouble. I'm talking I'm talking theoretically here. Like if, so, you know, because the type of people that listen to this show are a bunch of degenerates like myself. And we're thinking, how can we get around the not that we're doing anything wrong, but it's
if you're in the US, if you're in the US, you're probably putting a target on yourself. But if you are a multimillionaire in the US and you're doing something, because it's easier, if you've got, $5,000 and you're trying to move it offshore, it's probably not even worth the hassle. You're probably just better off just buying Bitcoin or, keeping, gold that can't be traced, or better off even Monero or, physical silver or something like that. But, in terms of, I forgot what they call it, OFAC or something report. And if you have money offshore, then you've got to declare it. And the other thing is, a lot of other countries won't even accept American deposits. So you actually have to have another citizenship somewhere else, or a wife that has citizenship somewhere else or something, in order to get a bank account somewhere else, because the US and I don't even really know how many other places they will even accept US money. So, maybe that's a better theoretical question from 15 years ago or pre 9/11, but now that's not actually something that's very easy to do. And they're probably not going to really bend too many rules for you unless you have millions of dollars, or if you've already gone through and gotten citizenship somewhere else, or getting a residency somewhere else, or have legitimate business interests somewhere else. It's not a super easy thing to do, but you're going to have to, marry that with different types of trust. And I gave a presentation at Acapulco where it was a workshop that, I don't know, maybe 50 people saw it, but then I put it online, and it was, the top 10 ways that the ultra rich, help legally avoid taxes. And there's different things economic opportunity zones and charitable remainder trust and charitable deed trust and donor advised funds and all these. And the thing is, if a guy like Bill Gates and all these super rich people, they didn't really give away their money. They gave it away to their own foundations, and then they got massive tax breaks for doing so. And sometimes they put them into charitable remainder trusts, and those trusts, you get to legally bypass all capital gains. You then get a tax deduction on top of it, and then you pay yourself a certain percentage. Let's say you're paying yourself 7%. And then now this, and there is a certain algorithm to figure out what's the max and most. And it depends upon if you're married and how old you are. And that's the main two is how old you are. But then, let's say you put in $1 million, you're taking 7% out. Now you're paying yourself $70,000 per year. It's going to you, but it's in a charitable remainder trust. You die, then that money then goes to another foundation, which can be your own foundation, that then either does your own work or does, maybe gives to other charities that you want to do. And so I've actually helped specialize with people in the Bitcoin space. And actually, it's where we're at now, 13.6, so almost 14,000. And which is nice, because that's right where it starts really making sense for a lot of my guys, where if they got in early, you put in $1,000, now you got 10 million, you can't hide $10 million. Or if you do, you're going to be hiding it. And why is the point of you making that, huge investment for you not to be able to, use any of your money? And so if you put it into one of these charitable trusts, then now, you've, sort of declared, I've got the Bitcoin, but now it's in a different entity. But then that charitable trust can then pay you money while you're alive, and then with all the tax breaks, you can use different types of life insurance, put those in other special types of trusts, commonly referred to as an ILIT or irrevocable life insurance trust, and then that will then flows outside of your estate to then pay your family upon your death, which can then also get paid into another type of trust. So the ultra rich, have people like me and people that are even more connected than me to do this sort of stuff for them. And obviously, Bill Gates isn't calling me up to go do anything after, some of the videos I put out about him, and neither is Warren Buffett. But these guys want to raise taxes because, first off, they don't even pay income tax; they pay capital gains tax, and then they avoid capital gains tax by using all these other schemes. And then even the money that Bill Gates donates, there's a video of him in Davos that you probably have seen where he said he gets a 20-to-1 return on his investments in pharma, because it's not really an investment. He's, gets a foundation to give money to Johns Hopkins or somebody else. And then, magically, these, places that get money from certain people then are able to find a way to come to the same conclusions that people want. And that's why you have things like Event 201, where they're giving out coronavirus, stuffed plush toys. And I forgot if it was November, or actually, I think it was October. Last year. So we just came up on the 1-year anniversary, which also came up on the 1-year anniversary of Hillary's birthday yesterday. So you know,
happy birthday, Hillary.
Hi,
Hillary. I forgot to
tell. Sorry.
I think Donald Trump has something for you for your birthday this year. It might be a Supreme Court.
A Supreme Court justice. So Amy Barrett Cohen got confirmed yesterday on Hillary's birthday.
Yeah. Well, this episode will go out after the election. So anything we talk about speculating on the election will be totally worthless. But so we'll skip that. But let me ask you this. If somebody's listening, they've got money, they're hearing crypto, they're hearing physical gold and physical silver, things like this, they're wondering, how much of this can I do with my own IRA? Can I self-direct things into this? What do you do? What can you do for a customer that comes to you? What are the options that you have available to a new person that comes to Liberty Advisor and says, Tim, I've got money, I've been doing it the right way all my life. I've got mutual funds and stocks and bonds and all that shit that my traditional accountant put together, but I've got some real concerns about the future of this country. I've got concerns about the value of the US dollar, whether it's going to have any value at all. I like physical gold. I mean, I like gold and silver. It sounds like a good hedge. Do I buy ETFs? Do I buy actual gold? They come to you and they have all these questions. What are the things that you can do for them?
So there are, you know, there's a few major, you know, retirement concerns that people have. And obviously people that come to me are mainly, you know, hardcore libertarian crypto anarchist type people. I mean, I got, you know, I don't really have anybody that comes to me nowadays that's, you know, like a Hillary supporter, because I've already lost all those clients. Or even some Trump supporters got really offended by some of the stuff I was saying. But, you know, the big problems that are out there, you have inflation risk, deflation risk, market risk, which is just, you know, the risk of the market going down, interest rate risk, which is what I briefly touched on before, which is the risk of, you know, if interest rates start going up, then the underlying values of the bonds go down. So if you have $1 million, a 10-year duration bond, rates go up 1%, your underlying value goes, your bond is now worth $900,000. So if you're going to have to pull from that principal, you're going to be screwed. And so that, you know, that's another big risk that no one has really seen who's currently retired, because rates haven't really been going up since, you know, since before I was alive. Actually, sequence of return risk, which is the notion, this is very important if you're very close to retirement or you just retired, super important. So if you have the market goes down, let's say 20% year one, and you're pulling out 4%, you've got to gain, I think it's 42% over the next 3 years just to get back to even. Because if you're, because mathematically you're pulling money out while the market's going down. So now you've got to get back even more because you're actively withdrawing money. And that's a huge, huge thing that's going to impact a lot of people. So it doesn't matter if you average 10% a year, if you're down, you know, 40% year one, it's, you know, really cataclysmic to try to bounce back from something like that. And then I forgot how many I've already listed, but then the biggest risk is actually living too long. So maybe with coronavirus, they're trying to help us out there. But, you know, so if you, you know, live 1 year past you retire, it doesn't really, you don't have to be a genius to figure it out. But if you live, you know, but the longer you live, the more chance you have inflation or deflation or market risk or sequence of return risk or interest rate risk or any of these other geopolitical risks that are out there. And so it's really trying to balance all those different things. And then the answer is going to be different than if that person's, you know, 35 and coming to me and is already a crypto millionaire, or 35 and just starting out, or if they're 65 and they've got, you know, $1 million and they want to retire now, you know, the answer is going to be a little bit different. But, you know, in terms of broad-based advice for everybody, you know, we do have self-directed IRAs where I'm probably the only financial advisor besides the other, you know, few that are with me. And actually the company that I do this through is called Innovative Advisory Group. I'm the Liberty Advisor, sort of like my marketing moniker. But Innovative is specialized in self-directed IRAs where we have clients who have gold inside their IRAs. Now this part isn't inside their IRA. But I don't even recommend really that gold's necessarily in the IRA, because you can't hold the gold at your home anyways. But it's better off just not having it. But if that's all the money that you have, then we can get gold into your IRA. If you've got other money on the side, there's actually different gold leases that are out there where you can lease your gold to a company and they'll pay you like 3, 4, or 5% interest in gold back. And so you can actually net it out where you can have your gold stored essentially for free. But you've obviously got to do a lot of due diligence on that and make sure it's a good company. But we have, you know, clients who have physical, you know, gold and silver in their IRAs. We have clients who have actual cryptocurrency inside their IRAs. I really recommend people do that inside of a Roth, because it's more of a home run type play. So Roth IRA, all the gains are tax free. But the important part is our clients actually hold the private keys too. And then, but a lot of what I do isn't, we have a lot of clients who are, you know, we customize the portfolio based upon what the client already has and what they need. So if the client already has a ton of gold with us, or a ton of gold in general, we don't necessarily need to load them up. Or if they already have a bunch of Bitcoin, then we don't need to do anything for them on that side of the equation. But even on the traditional side of things, most of the money that people have with us is more traditional assets, but it's managed untraditionally. So what I mentioned before, the put options. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we do the gold and silver and the Bitcoin, and people might want to, you know, make fun of me for that. Well, you know, well, we are up, you know, quite a bit on that stuff. But, you know, even the traditional stuff, we kick everyone else's ass on the traditional side of things by getting, you know, basically all the gains last year and none of the losses this year, or hardly any this year. You know, there's very few people that can say that. And so even if you're like, hey, Tim, we're not really interested in gold or silver or Bitcoin, fine, you know, we don't have to put you into that. Like, we can notate that. And even the traditional side of things is untraditional. And right now we actually are heavy in, you know, in cash. And I think there's very little upside to this, you know, what goes on around the election time, but I think there is a lot of downside potential. And actually, one contrarian thought to that, though, is I did read today that it's the most amount of investors ever thought that the stock market crash is imminent, which is almost a contrarian sign, meaning it's not imminent. So but it's also weird that we are, you know, pretty much within earshot of an all-time high while everyone thinks it's about the crash. So it's, you know, very weird juxtaposition that we're in right now. But yeah, we could do all sorts of different things. It sort of depends on what people are looking for. We can also charge for just, you know, hourly advice, which I don't do very much of, or different planning packages where, you know, we kind of take you through soup to nuts, dot all the I's, cross all the T's, figure out what we need to do to help, you know, get you and your family on a better path to, you know, achieving whatever your goals are. But we're definitely not cookie cutter. Everything we do is, obviously, you know, people could tell from listening to this, I don't sound like the average person that's out there.
That's why I wanted you on, because if anyone wants to just, I mean, whoever you want to go to E-Trade and do that, go for it. I mean, you can do all that stuff. You don't need to find Tim to do that. I wanted to have you on because after sitting with you for like 4 days there in Acapulco and watching all the people come up and watching your presentations and the people you were talking to, the people that were coming to you and hiring you to manage their portfolio, I was like, you know, this is not for everybody. We'll put that out there. You know, not everybody has this interest, but for people that,
in fact, I try to actually scare people away. So I try to put as much stuff that, because I don't want to have it come back where they're like, oh, well, CNBC has told me this. Because I did lose clients when I initially spoke at Acapulco, because there's a whole big story where the company I was with banned every advisor from speaking out on Bitcoin, even though I was trying to tell people how they could sell Bitcoin at the top. And so I left that, and then the state of Arizona decided not to renew my license for, like, you know, mainly all of 2018. So, but the funny thing is, I was already doing Zoom meetings with people. So when this whole pandemic struck, like, I was already sitting working virtually, right, and getting clients virtually. So it was, you know, a really great thing that, you know, I took my licks, you know, 2 years ago, and then now bounce back way stronger. But I almost every client I have now is of this mindset. And so I don't feel pressured to have to do something because a client wants me to, because they're all here. They're all, not that I'm trying to create an echo chamber, but, you know, it was difficult in the past when clients like, oh, well, I was listening to CNBC. It's like, you know what, like you said with E-Trade, like, okay, you know what, go have CNBC manage your money. Go have Jim Cramer go manage it. I don't care.
Or set up, hey, keep your portfolio that wants to do that and do the traditional stuff. But you have the option here to add on a new portfolio with Tim and have him manage it in a way that is non-conventional. But I'll tell you what, we were surrounded by Bitcoin millionaires at Acapulco. Okay, so maybe going the unconventional route is not the worst thing, because there are a lot of people that might have been called crazy for doing their own thing. Oh, you're involved in crypto? Or, oh, okay, well, we know who you are. Oh, really? We saw a lot of people there that were sitting on some serious money from cryptocurrency. So if it's something that interests people and they're not totally sure about how to get involved in it or what they want to do or how much of their portfolio they want to allocate towards something like this, my suggestion, talk to Tim, because you aren't going to find too many people out there like this. Now, it's not for everybody, but for those that it is, that like this, that have an interest in this, where can people find you to at least start this conversation?
You go to thelibertyadvisor.com. It's going to have, you know, some information about me that's on there and some of the services we offer. But, you know, if you want to see, you know, more, I guess, of like the proof of different stuff I've done and talked about, the Liberty Advisor show will be all the different content that's out there. I'm trying to, you know, link the two. I've got my website guy actually working on it now. But, you know, I've got, you know, a podcast where I've been putting out, you know, different propaganda for Ford. Actually, I started right after the election. I started, I think, like the day or two after Trump won. It's actually, unfortunately, a lot of the things I had warned Trump about in that episode have now come to pass. Yeah. I'd recommend people go watch that presentation from Anarcho Poco, which was actually uploaded the day before the market started going down to YouTube. That was uploaded February 19th. The market started going down February 20th. The first time I ever talked about my strategy on video was October 3rd, 2018. The day after was the day Jerome Powell said we're on autopilot and that they were just keep raising rates by a quarter every quarter. And so I was, you know, out in front of him saying there's no way that they could, you know, do this type of strategy. John Snyson and myself have a Tim and John show that we put out, you know, pretty much every week. Shoot another episode later today. A lot of that's more like heavy financial kind of geek stuff. But yeah, I've got a lot of stuff on the website about cryptocurrency, a lot about some not as much political analysis, because I sort of realized that the better way of dealing with the state is through cryptocurrency rather than trying to, you know, waste all my time and energy into voting for somebody that we don't even know if the vote's accurately counted, because you know, there's so many ways they game it, whether it's through fraction magic or through, you know, that's a whole nother rabbit trail down there.
Episode. It's a mess.
But we have videos. You can find me on Library and on BitChute. I don't know, depending on when this comes out, I may or may not still be on YouTube if they haven't associated me with people who have been kicked off.
So. That goes for everything. That goes for everybody that comes on here. They may or may not be, this show as well, may or may not live on YouTube for much longer. God forbid we start talking about some non-traditional things or that go against the established narrative. And if people want to say, John Snyson was on here too. We had him on. He talked about central banking and things like that. Your partner from World Alternative Media. Great videos about that. People can find that on BitChute and everywhere. Tim, you're the best. Hopefully I'll see you this coming year in Mexico. We'll see. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And hey, everybody, if you like this video, share it with your friends and family. Like we just said, YouTube can't be trusted. All these platforms can't be trusted to get the word out. So it's going to be up to you. If you like what you see, share it.
I call it WhoTube now.
Yeah,
World Health Organization.
ThemTube. Yeah, it's not, they didn't build it for us. They don't want us there, whatever. We'll stay as long as we can. We'll use their platform for our own selfish means. Tim, you're the best. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.